This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome to Jikoji. Thanks for driving up the harrowing road to get here. I'm going to speak about the text that we chanted during the service, by the last half of it, or just parts of the last half of it. So for some background, we trace our practice to Buddha, about 500 BC. And then there's a record of the successive teachers, the successive generations of teachers that we say represent the practice we do. And then around 500 Common Era, a gentleman named Bodhidharma went by boat from southern India to China. When he got to China, there were already several types of Buddhism, but he presented the practice he was doing in India, which I guess technically wasn't called Zen, but must have been Zen, because that's what he knew. And then Bodhidharma had students, and then historically we track the generations of students and teachers through China, 500. And then the author of the text I'm going to speak of, Dogen Zenji, was born in Japan in 1200. He became a monk at an early age, practiced some types of Buddhism in Japan, but he felt he should go to China to see how things were still taught there. He traveled around China a little bit. He met a teacher he liked. He practiced in a monastery with him for 5 or more years. And he went back to Japan, where there were also different types of Buddhism, but he presented the tradition that we trace the Buddhism we're interested in back to Dogen. He was a prolific writer. Studying Buddhism, you read this stuff and go, wow, this is so true. And then you're like, well, this was written 1,000 years ago. You know, it's like, I guess people don't change that much. So I'm going to go through some of my favorite parts of that, his text, which is the first essay he wrote upon returning to Japan, to kind of explain our school of Buddhism. The basis is meditation, and he explains meditation. The Zazen, that's what we refer to as meditation, I speak of as not learning meditation. It is simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, a practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is a manifestation of ultimate reality. Traps and snares can never reach it. So most activities we think, I'm going to learn them. I'm going to acquire lots of pointers and skills and techniques, and I'm going to have a lot of, you know, word knowledge about what I'm learning. So Zazen is not learning meditation. So meditation instruction I gave today, we don't have more advanced meditation. What I'm saying, The meditation instruction I gave, when I sit down to meditate every time, I keep giving myself the same instruction. Cliff, you sitting up straight? Your chin balanced? Your shoulders relaxed? Are you breathing? Are you breathing? The same meditation throughout. I would almost say meditation is kind of a unlearning of, we have very kind of habitual obsessions and ways we look at the world. Meditation's a chance to just open up to the present moment and let things go. And also, part of our view is, instead of "I am doing meditation," and say, I hope I can let meditation kind of do me, kind of become meditation, instead of "I'm doing this." Just the "I" never disappears, but it's less prominent. Like, just merge with meditation. He says it's simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss. And so a lot of Dogen, his language is kind of shocking, because you're just sitting in meditation and you're struggling, and he goes, "It's repose and bliss." And you go, "Really?" And it's not that you don't, you get used, your body gets used to meditating. It gets easier. Your muscles, your nervous system, you get used to it. And you can experience repose and bliss, but you can't predict when. I could guarantee you, well, you, if you practice this enough, you will experience repose and bliss. But my teacher always says, life's not a vending machine. You know, put in your, well, used to be a quarter, whatever, and push a button and get, life is, we can't predict. In meditation, we can't predict exactly, but over time, I would predict you can experience repose and bliss. It is a manifestation of ultimate reality, which is, reality is what's happening right now. He says traps and snares can never reach it. So I think some spiritual practices with different stages and teachers, yeah, it's almost like a, seems like a game. One of the teachers in our tradition says, we try to present meditation without toys, just simply meditating. No, not the usual calculating human mind, which would be like traps or snares. So I say, you can trust it. You know, you can just simply, you can trust you. You can trust your subconscious. There's not, we're not playing games here. Just simple. Now, here's my favorite line. Once its heart is grasped, you are like the dragon when it gains the water, like the tiger when it enters the mountain. So if you can imagine, like, maybe the tiger and the dragon are like in a cage, or in a city, they're just out of their element, so they don't feel very good. And then a tiger returning to the jungle, a dragon returning to the ocean, you can imagine how happy they are. So he says, meditate, and he says, once its heart is grasped. So it's not, I don't like to divide up the heart and the mind, but sometimes, people are very mind, or sometimes we're very mind. I mean, sometimes he's really stressing the heart. So the state of repose and bliss, the state you can feel and experience, is like the tiger returning to the jungle, a dragon returning to the water. Says, for you must know that just there in Zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself. And that from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. But here's another one of his shocking lines, because if you meditate, you're like, supposed to be sure, whatever, awake, not dull, but you sit there and your dullness and your mind is distracted. So you're like, what are you talking about? Dogen, he says, from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. Well, he's saying our original state, our natural state, is being aware and awake. And dullness and distraction, they're just kind of like clouds. They're changing. They're not that substantial. Behind clouds, actually, we forget this. Behind clouds, the sun is shining. We can remind ourselves that. So he says our natural state is kind of like the sun. It's always there. The stillness and distraction are, like I said, ephemeral, less substantial. He wants to stress the way things are from the first. He says, when you arise from sitting, move slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Do not rise suddenly or abruptly. So when you finish meditating, it's not like, well, maybe you're like, oh, I'm glad that's over, but, and I'm gonna, well, of course, you'll do many wonderful things in your life, but he's kind of saying, well, take a moment to this reflective state of quiet and calm and being deliberate. So when you're mindful and calm, you're a little more deliberate in your actions. He's saying, stay with that for a little while. And man, don't interpret this as don't dance. Don't party. In life, we do many just wonderful, crazy things. I used to like, before our knees got too bad, I liked rock and roll dancing a lot. And then when I did rock and roll dancing, I felt like I was become one with the band, one with the music, one with my body. I felt like that was a different manifestation of Zen. He says, in surveying the past, we find transcendence of both unenlightenment and enlightenment. So Dogen was really big. Everyone thinks the point is to transcend unenlightenment. But when people have an enlightenment, then they get stuck on that, maybe a little bit of ego, maybe they don't want to give it up. Dogen's always saying go beyond enlightenment because fortunately our life goes on for a while. And don't get stuck on anything. So he's always saying go beyond enlightenment. And this next part, there's some interesting stories. He says, dying while either sitting or standing have all depended entirely on the strengths of Zazen. So there's these stories, I think mainly from China, Japan, of the And the Zen teacher, they get old and they're about to die. And they say, you know, I'm going to sit and meditate and die. I'm going to stand and die. There's one guy, he did a headstand. He must have been good at yoga. He did a headstand and then he died. So the idea of these people were had some advanced abilities to do this story. This teacher died sitting in Zazen. He died, but he didn't fall over. And his students were like, oh, you know, we can't disturb him meditating. You know, I don't know what to do with his body. He's just sitting there. So they called, his sister came over. His sister came and she just pushed him over and said he was always such a show off. So evidently, Dogen respected these stories. Indeed, it cannot be fully known by practicing or realizing of supernatural powers. It must be deportment beyond hearing and seeing. Is it not a principle that is prior to knowledge and perceptions? So we're very attuned. We think reality is what we hear and we see, what we perceive, what we know, or like that's reality. An important point of Zen, well, we're born into this world with this call the mind and body together, called the nervous system, and it has experiences in our culture. So we get acculturated to our culture because we're having these experiences with our parents and our environment. Those experiences kind of hardwire our nervous system. So when we are interested in reality, but we everything's filtered to our nervous system, which has already been conditioned by our experiences. Zen's a little bit interested in us being less conditioned by our experiences. So we say, what is the world before we, not only before we start to think about it and apply our habitual cultural thinking, what is it before we even run it through our senses? Because our senses are already kind of predisposed to see things not a certain way instead of see things as they are. So Zen, just mindfulness, being in the present moment, we're just trying to give the information from the outside world. We're trying to see that more clearly by focusing on knowing that something's there before, well, kind of never before. I mean, twisted sounds like a negative word. Maybe we have wonderful ways of seeing the world, but they're all kind of relying on our predisposition instead of relying on what's actually happening. So a big thing, important part of mindfulness, I'd say, is listening to people. What are they actually saying? So you look at somebody when they're talking, you listen, but we're already kind of interpreting it. We're like, ah, I bet you they're saying this. And I bet you they're saying this about that because this about that is my subconscious obsession. And like, and then you find out, we often find out, oh, I was wrong. That's not really what they meant. That's not really what they were saying. I just am so stuck in assuming I know what's going on. So Zen is a wonderful practice to counter that, to open ourselves up. So it kind of sounds crazy, like prior to knowledge and perceptions, like, but that's just to direct us to, listen anew, see anew, to have a fresh experience of life. Which is already here. So he says, this being the case, intelligence or lack of it does not matter. Between the dull and the sharp-witted, there is no distinction. Concentrate your efforts single-mindedly. That in itself is negotiating the way. Practice realization is naturally undefiled. Going forward in practice is a matter of everydayness. So from the beginning, he says it's not learning meditation. We're not building up this body of knowledge. We're interested in concentrate your efforts single-mindedly. That's paying attention to what's going on, what's going on. The wind is often moving the leaves. Cloudy, there's wonderful, we're in a wonderful environment with wonderful people. That's what's going on. That's where we concentrate. And he said, it's already naturally undefiled. It's just, this is the way things are. And my current teacher, his favorite line in this is, going forward is a matter of everydayness. So in Zen and mindfulness, we stress it's a normal, just your daily life is where it's. You walk one step at a time, you wash one dish at a time, you put away one article of clothing at a time. Just waking up to your everyday life is our goal. Okay, the last paragraph. These honored followers of Zen, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not be suspicious of the true dragon. So that line has two stories. One about an elephant, one about a dragon. Probably heard the story about an elephant. This comes from India. There was a group of blind people hanging out with an elephant. And one person grasped the leg and says, an elephant's like a tree. And one grasped the tail, says, the elephant's a wispy thing. One touches the side, says, an elephant's a rough wall. One grabs the tusk and is like, the elephant's this smooth, sharp thing. And they're all, so they're arguing with each other about what an elephant is. This is exactly the human condition. We all live, have lived different lives, and we've all drawn different conclusions. And we're all arguing with each other about the same reality. Think they did one experiment of children like facing a ball that half is painted red and half's painted blue, and they're on opposite sides, and they start arguing about the ball. You almost have to be a certain age before you realize, wait a minute, we got to figure out why I think the ball is blue and you think the ball is red. And then they stand up and look like, oh, each side's painted differently. So he says that's the human condition. So do not be suspicious of the true dragon. There was a guy, probably in China who loved dragons. He got every book about dragon. His room was full of dragon artwork, statues. He just loved dragons. And then there was a dragon that heard about this guy. Said, "Wow, there's this guy that loves dragons so much. I'm going to go visit him." So the dragon got there, stuck his head in the guy's window, and the guy looked up and he just fainted. Stone cold. He was so shocked. He couldn't handle it. He just fainted. He could not handle a real dragon. So this story points to our practice that we, well, I say lots of people think meditation is a good idea, and Buddhist teaching seem pretty good. And so we're like, I like that stuff. But Dogen says, please go, please deal with your real life and please actually meditate. Please actually study. And it's our encouragement to get to know True Dragon, which is just your life the way it is. Devote your energies to a way that directly indicates the absolute. This is mindfulness. Put your energy towards your immediate experience. Be curious about what's actually going on. But I have to say, absolute, sometimes I use the word oneness. So I'll just briefly say a big part of teaching, there's two aspects, but they're not in contradiction with each other. We really thrive as humans by knowing differences, like which mushrooms aren't poisonous and which conditions are favorable for us. So we're very keen to differences. There's an aspect of reality we call oneness, that nothing has ever been separated. But just picture being in space and you see the whole Earth. All Earth, that's oneness. Oh, there's so many examples. We breathe. Our breath, we're sharing our breaths. Sorry to say. So with differences, we learn we don't share our toothbrushes. But with oneness, we realize I'm sharing the road, I'm taking care of the bicyclist. I'm taking care of the sports car because I'm going to pull over. Because we're attuned, we're connected. We're connected to everything. So that's a symbol of the absolute. Because revere the person of complete attainment. Who is beyond all human agency. Well, that's kind of an ideal. Ideals, yeah, we're developing an ideal here. Again, accord with the enlightenment of the Buddhas, succeed to the legitimate lineage of the ancestor Samadhi. Constantly perform in such a manner, and you are assured of being a person such as they. Their treasure store will open of itself. Your treasure store, sorry, God. Your treasure store will open of itself and you will use it at will. So he's simply saying we can be inspired by people in the past, and perhaps some people in the present that mindfulness, meditation, being curious about a reality is a practice you can do. And if you do it for a while, well, it's interesting because we're always, hopefully, where everybody is learning from life and maturing. But some people don't seem to be maturing that fast. I say old people are wise, but some old people I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. So how do we do this practice? We besides he for all these words that he says and I'm saying, it's just very simply being present. But we have a kind of a culture of practice. We have Buddhism, we have Zen Buddhism, we have different Zen centers to support us in waking up. So we kind of boil it down to three main areas. One, so Buddha sat like we sit for a while and woke up. So I said, this is way too simplistic, but I believe if we put ourselves in the posture of the Buddha, sitting up straight and relaxed, standing up straight and relaxed, it affects our subconsciousness. Sometimes I say it's like a body language in reverse. It's like, yeah, I'm kind of worried. Or, yeah, I'm kind of resisting what you're saying. I haven't experimented with trying those to see how it affects for 40 minutes to see how it affects my attitude. But if we sit upright, relax, relatively still, we become upright, relaxed, and relatively still. That permeates our life. So that's Buddha. Dharma, we say we're interested in truth, and we're interested in how if people thought, are there different ways to think about the world? Buddhism has two big ways to think about the world. One is to wake up to being interconnected, and the other is waking up to things change. Especially things change, we think, oh, I know that one. But if you notice, study your mind, you're like, oh, I'm worried things aren't going to change. Or, so we get in the flow of change, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. It's really helpful to practice with people, to people look at me funny when I say this. I said, well, if you hang out with bank robbers, you might get involved with robbing a bank. It's like, so, who all right, when people are interested in waking up together, so for me, but I have a hard time meditating. I meditate more when there's people around. Other whatever works for you, of course. But try different things and be open to people. Thank you. We have some time for questions. I'll let you stay when it's over. 5 minutes of questions, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
good question.
Yeah.
So in your talk, you mentioned the story of a blind man measuring the elephant and how limited perspective cannot give us the entire big picture.
Right.
I am in a similar situation right now after a year and a half studying Buddhism. I, from my perspective, I don't see the proof of afterlife, which is central to the teaching of Buddhism, right? We want to achieve enlightenment to end the cycle of suffering, this birth, death, and rebirth. But from my perspective, I feel like when I die, I just die. I don't go to hell, I don't go to heaven, I don't reborn as a dog. So how do I see the entire picture here? Am I a blind man looking at an elephant?
Well, we're all blind. So the point of practical Buddhism, we're interested in practical Buddhism, which I said my teacher said everydayness. So as wise as Buddha was, he didn't ever talk about what happens when you die. That's a debate. We're not very interested in reincarnation. We're not very interested in the future. We're interested taking care of the present takes care of the future is what we're interested in. So it's just coming. And we're also interested in not knowing. So I think you're actually on the right track if you just don't worry about resolving what happens after you die. Well, when I think, of course I think what's going to happen after I die. Sometimes I was raised Christian. I think if I meet St. Peter, I'll go, uh-oh. But that's not important. Whatever happens after I die, I figure I'll need to take care of it, just like before I died. Whatever happens, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen in this life. Whatever comes up, I'll try to take care of it. After I die, I'll just try to take care of it.
I do have a question about the idea of waking up. Like when I wake up in the morning, I go about my day, I have my coffee, I'm energized, and then later in the day I get sleepy again and maybe I fall asleep. And I guess my question is, you know, if you reach an enlightenment, you know, and you fall back asleep, and what do you do then?
Mm-hmm. It's words are so confusing because they have so many different meanings. So, and one teacher I know, he says, we're not going to use the word enlightenment anymore. We're just going to use awake, but it's not awake opposed to sleep, to the sleep we do. It's not awake as opposed to not being tired. So the reality is, I'm tired. I need a nap. And I take a nap. That's more when you get old. Awake kind of means, and maybe we'll find a better word, just to be present. So what's going on, which might include, I'm not very present, you know, that we know. You know, we're just to tune in more to what's the way things are.
In that case, would you just tell yourself, okay, I'm not being very present right now, and not worry about it too much instead of fussing around and trying to become.
So being aware of not being a present is being present. And not worry about it too much. That's very good. Very good suggestion. One more question?
Is there anyone online that wants to ask the question?
Oh. Hello? We have six people online. They're all hiding behind their image. Oh, they might be chanting. Oh, that's you. Oh no, that's transcribing me. God. Sometimes I listen to a recording of my talk. I go, that's pretty good. And then I get the transcript. Man, this is terrible. Please stop transcribing me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.